to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up.
Welcome to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. I am your host, Tom Ernesty. It has been a long, long time for me. I'm glad I'm back doing this after a long moving process, but we are settled in. I am back. Joining me is my buddy, Dante Colonelli, who joins me on every Sunday pregame show, countdown to kickoff. Dante, how has your offseason been, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, man, it's been great. I'm happy to be back talking Dolphins football with you. It's been a really long time since you and I have been able to talk ball. I think the last time we did a podcast together was week 17, if I remember correctly. So it's been a while for us, man. I'm happy to be back. We got an exciting season to start previewing.
Yeah, this is a much more exciting season that we are previewing versus what we previewed last year. Because last year at the beginning, the unknown was huge. We didn't know what this team was going to look like coming into the 2020 season. The season started off really slow. And then obviously as the season progressed, they finished out the year 9-3. If I remember, they started 1-3. So basic math, 9 wins and 3 losses down the stretch. It was a lot of fun last year, but the expectations are a lot higher. And before we even get into any of the big games, we have to start talking about the preseason. But before we get to preseason, it's training camp. And it's one of my favorite times of the year to discuss the depth chart, how things are going to look for the Miami Dolphins heading into the regular season and what this roster is actually going to look like. So we are doing a 3-part series. Typically, most of you loyal readers and listeners to the podcast, I typically do a long 3-part article. But now that we have this live aspect, I think this is a lot easier and it saves my typing hands for my real job. So we're going to get right into it and we're going to start talking and give you a training camp preview. So let's get into the skill position players. And we can't talk about the skill position without talking about the most important position on the football field on every given Sunday. It's the quarterbacks. So Dante, let's break it down for you. The Miami Dolphins did make a move here in the offseason to bring in a new backup quarterback as Ryan Fitzpatrick has moved on. He's now the starting quarterback in Washington, and the Dolphins needed to bring in a backup quarterback, and they did so with Jacoby Brissett. Tua right now obviously is going to be the unquestioned starter. Of course, the pundits around the national media is going to say, well, how soon will he get pulled and this and that. I've had enough of that talk. Jacoby Brissett is a good backup quarterback. He's going to be there for Tua, but they're not going to be pulling Tua unless he's hurt at this point. And the third quarterback right now is Reed Sinnott. They have 3 quarterbacks on the roster. So actually my first question to you, Dante, are the Dolphins planning or do you believe they should bring in another quarterback for this run in the preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always pertinent to consistently check on the quarterback market, see if you can develop a young player on the practice squad. I don't think the Dolphins are going to end up carrying 3 quarterbacks during the season. I think that we'll probably see just Jacoby Brissett and Tua on the opening day roster and throughout different weeks. But I don't see any reason why you wouldn't want to bring in a younger guy to compete with Reed Sinnott and just, you know, see what you got there. Maybe you get a hit. Maybe you develop someone who was an undrafted free agent or a late round pick who got released by another team. Maybe they end up being a good, cheaper backup quarterback option for you in the future. And I think one thing that I had a former scout tell me one time was that teams should always be trying to evaluate the quarterback position. You should always be trying to keep your eyes peeled for those players and know what you want out of that position, whether you have Aaron Rodgers or whether you just drafted Tua. You should always be trying to evaluate that position. So I don't really see a downside to bringing in a fourth guy to compete with Reed Sinnott. Worst comes to worst, you just cut that guy during roster cuts like you cut any other player. I don't see any other downside. And then the more functional aspect of it is, you know, I don't know if you've ever been down to training camp, but like, you know, you need guys to throw footballs at the end of the day. And sometimes some of these quarterbacks just get brought on because they need guys, you know, they need, you know, some of the back end receivers to get targets, some of the back end tight ends and running backs. They just need someone to throw that football around. That's why you see a lot of teams carry four quarterbacks this time of the year. So I think it would be smart. I don't really know off the top of my head what the market looks like for guys, but I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. I just think it's good to kind of, you know, make sure that they're still in tune with that market and make sure that they're still properly evaluating that position. Because like you said, it's the most important position on the team.
Absolutely. And, you know, before we dive into each individual quarterback right now, I have to take a minute and I have to discuss what was said by someone from a rival team about Tua Tagovailoa. If you guys haven't heard it yet, so let me break it down for you. Nate Geary, who does some radio stuff for WGR 550, which is the main radio station for the Buffalo Bills. He was asked to rank the quarterbacks in the AFC East. I think at this point we know that the number one quarterback in the AFC East as of today is Josh Allen. That's unquestioned.
Correct. Yes.
Number two quarterback for Nate Geary was Cam Newton. All right. You know, former MVP. Okay. Whatever. He picked Zach Wilson number three. And then he picked Mitchell Trubisky at number four. Before picking Tua at number five.
Ridiculous.
So, real quick, I have to say something. That was the most ridiculous take I've ever heard. I don't care if it's WGR. I don't care if it's small-time stuff. That is the worst hot take I've ever heard. And the reasoning behind it was ridiculous. Yes, Tua was pulled in two games. Tua was they won one of those games on a miracle throw. And the other one they lost because Ryan Fitzpatrick is who Ryan Fitzpatrick was. He threw interceptions when the game counted at the end. Outside of that, Tua 6-3 as a starting quarterback, 11 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. 3 of them alone were in the final week of the year. And that was a game when the wide receivers dropped. What was the count on that? 12 passes, 13 passes?
Yeah, it was roughly a lot. I think is the official number for that. It was a lot. Yeah. Yep.
And he still tossed for 364 yards. So at the end of the day, it was the worst hot take I've ever heard. Nate Geary should be ashamed of himself for throwing a hot take like that out there. But I understand why he did it. He's a Buffalo homer. I get it. But sitting here today, Tua right now is the number two quarterback in the AFC East. Because Cam Newton, after what we watched last year with Cam Newton, he is atrocious. He is no longer Cam Newton from 2015. His career is winding down. He can't throw a football anymore. Okay, you can call this a hot take. He can't throw the football anymore. His passes that go on the swing passes and the screen passes are in the dirt before it even gets to the wide receiver. The bubble screens, Adam Gase would probably pull his remaining hairs out of his head watching Cam Newton throw a bubble screen down the line of scrimmage. Zach Wilson hasn't seen a snap yet. We have no idea how he is going to be as a quarterback in the league. And Mitchell Trubisky, I have a very good friend who is a Bears fan. He's terrible. Let's be frank. He is not good as a quarterback in the NFL, which is why now he's a backup quarterback. And, you know, granted, he's behind Josh Allen, but he is not the fourth best quarterback in this division. So I just wanted to say that before we moved on. Nate Geary, that was the most ridiculous take I've ever heard regarding Tua. Anyway, now let's talk about the quarterback position. So Tua is the unquestioned starter. Do you feel that is the right thing to do? We did this with Ryan Tannehill for 7 years where they did not have any competition for him. Is Jacoby Brissett going to push Tua? Is that what Brian Flores is going to preach in practice?
I mean, he's going to preach that in practice, but I don't think it actually is a real competition. I don't think that, you know, look, Brian Flores is going to be the type of guy who's going to go out there and he's going to say, we have competition in every position. Nobody's earned their spot, blah, 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 blah. Look, guys, Tua's the week one starter. Any other take that you hear, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be the guy taking snaps. And I'm going to be quite honest. That's the way it should be. I think it would just be absolutely and utterly ridiculous to bring in legitimate competition for a second year quarterback. You know, I think you want to talk about, you know, Ryan Tannehill, and I'm glad you brought that up. I think, you know, obviously we could start complaining about a lack of competition for Ryan Tannehill later in his career. But as a young player, I really don't think that that was the problem. I don't think it was ever the problem. There was a, you know, that those teams were bad. I mean, let's just be honest. They were not good football teams, and Ryan Tannehill needed a support system around him. You know, it's not like he went to Tennessee and all of a sudden he got pushed by a backup quarterback, you know, and now he's great. I mean, he blew Marcus Mariota out of the water when he came in. That wasn't much of a competition once Tannehill got in there. So I think that, again, Tua needs to be the unquestioned guy, you know, and I was very, you know, if you guys listened to the Countdown to Kickoff show last year, you know that I was a staunch opponent of playing Ryan Fitzpatrick in any capacity at all, which, again, I will stick to my guns on that one. I think I was right, and I'm, you know, going to keep preaching that. So I think that Tua is the guy. If he's the guy, you need to fully invest in him. You need to throw him out onto the field. You know, this is not the 1980s anymore where quarterbacks sit behind an established backup for 2 years and then they come in and take over the franchise. That's just not how it works anymore. You don't get that time anymore. The quarterback evaluation period has been sped up. So yeah, Tua is the guy. He should be the guy. He needs to be the guy. And quite frankly, he's better than Jacoby Brissett. I don't really like, he is, his ceiling is better. I think at worst, he's just as good as Jacoby Brissett is right now. At worst, that's like the low end of the spectrum. I think that, you know, I'm very excited to not have a quarterback controversy, because I think that that was probably my least favorite thing that the coaching staff has done since they came to Miami as a whole. Brian Flores, I thought the way that they handled the quarterback position last year was laughably bad. And I've said that on this podcast before. And I'm sticking to that. I thought it was absolutely bad, just not good. And I'm very, very excited to see what Tua does with a full offseason where he's the guy, he's the unquestioned guy. He's going to come in week one. He had training camp, he had mini camp. You know, he didn't have to deal with the pandemic or any of these other things. He's the guy. This is his offense. Let's see him run it. Let's see him do his stuff. So I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be good for him. I think, you know, he's going to take at least a tangible jump this year at worst.
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to get into the other things that they've done to help Tua in his development in year two. But, you know, you hit the nail on the head, and we talked about this constantly, and we're going to still talk about it. In last season, Tua focused on rehab. He did not focus himself and his body on playing 9-10 football games. That's just not how his body worked last year, because he was focused on rehabilitating the hip, making sure he could walk again and play the sport that he loves.
Yeah, seems important.
And you could tell towards the end of the year, it looked like he was laboring on the football field. It did not look like he was comfortable. His footwork wasn't the best. It looked like he was just laboring a lot. It looked like the hip was kind of bothering. He's had an entire strengthening offseason. We've all seen the Instagram videos. We've all seen the workouts. He looks primed and ready to have a very good season. And I'm here for it. And I'm happy Jacoby Brissett is here, because it's not going to tempt Brian Flores enough to replace Tua if he's struggling with Jacoby Brissett. Let Tua live with what he's doing. Let him learn from his mistakes and let him develop. Yes, they say the clock is ticking on Tua, but you have to look within the division and look at a guy like Josh Allen. After two seasons in Buffalo, they should have said, yeah, we got to try to figure something else out. They stuck with him. They gave him the talent. They gave him Stephon Diggs. Cole Beasley it came around. Gabe Davis had a very good rookie year. Josh Allen was lights out last year. He was an MVP candidate last year, and the Bills' offense was really, really good. But they didn't give up on Josh Allen. They gave him the tools. They gave him the coaching. Now this is where he is. We'll see if it continues for him. But with Tua, this is the leap forward. They gave him a lot of help. I think he's going to make that next step, which is going to be fantastic. Let's dive into the running back position. My favorite position, Dante, as you well know, during draft time, this is my favorite position to talk about. And the reason behind it is I don't think they did enough. I really don't think they did enough to help in that position. And I've been a firm component of to help a young quarterback develop in this league, you need to have a sound ground game. You don't have to have a like an upper echelon 1A. I understand you can run many different guys. They did that last year and it failed. It failed maybe because Myles Gaskin was out and he didn't play the plethora of games that he should, you know, we wanted him to play based on his production. I still believe they need a bell cow back. I still cringe to the day that they passed on Najee Harris, but I understand Jalen Phillips is a good football player. I'm not mad about that. I'm mad that they had a guy that is probably going to transform the Pittsburgh Steelers this year into who they were back when Le'Veon Bell was in his prime and not the, you know, stifling baby mamas for those checks that he's now not paying. The depth chart for the running back position is Myles Gaskin, Malcolm Brown, who they brought in from the Rams as an unrestricted free agent. They drafted Jared Doakes out of Cincinnati, seventh round pick. Patrick Laird is still here. Jordan Scarlett. And then we got Salvin Ahmed. Dante, I know you're not a huge proponent of drafting running backs high, but what do you think of this group? Do you think that this group is going to give enough for the Miami Dolphins to succeed on offense?
Yeah, I think it comes down to what your definition of enough is. I think that they'll be serviceable because, you know, we're not going to talk about it on this show, but I think the Dolphins have very much improved their offensive line. And typically what you see with teams around the league is a direct correlation of offensive line improvement and running back improvement, which is the reason that I was jumping for joy when the Dolphins did not select Najee Harris at pick 18. I was absolutely ecstatic. I think drafting a running back in the first round is quite possibly the worst decision that any franchise could make. But you and I just very different philosophies there. But I do understand what you're saying, right? It is important to have a balance on offense. You do want to be able to run the football. You don't want to be a one-dimensional team. That's certainly not what I'm advocating for. I think that Myles Gaskin, Salvin Ahmed, Malcolm Brown, I think you can get enough out of those three guys to at least be productive. And you know what? I think that the Dolphins showed that they could run the football at times last year. I mean, I remember sitting in the stands watching them go for over 100 with Salvin Ahmed against the Patriots, which was still a good run defense last year, despite all of their different struggles. Their defense was, you know, still pretty okay. So, you know, if the Dolphins offensive line can really take a jump, if we see Solomon Kinley come back healthy, he takes a jump. We see Robert Hunt play a little bit better at guard and Liam Eichenberg's a good, you know, plug in at tackle. I mean, we could really see this team take a jump and open up more holes, make the lives of Myles Gaskin, Salvin Ahmed, and Malcolm Brown easier. Now, is this going to be a running back room that's going to blow you away? Is this going to be a running back room that's going to be really productive, that's going to be the focal point of this team? I mean, absolutely not. It's just, it's not going to be that way. And I'll be honest, I would not have hated if the Dolphins went out and signed a bit more of a veteranish presence, a guy who's been a little bit more established, maybe at the back end of his career. I know a lot of Dolphins fans weren't a fan of this, but I wouldn't hate it if they would have signed James Conner, even to just like a prove it deal, just to show up and see what he has, you know, stuff like that. I would have been okay with that just to get another name in that room. Maybe, you know, someone who can keep you on schedule. You know, I know that, you know, Frank Gore was, you know, at the end of his career and Adam Gase used him way too much. And that was a disaster. But even that type of player, if used correctly, can be very effective. So I would have liked to see them do a little bit more there, but again, I think that this is a team that's going to improve. And then another addition as well that I really think will help the running backs and why I think that this will be enough is that you get Will Fuller and you get Jaylen Waddle. They're going to force defenses to pull players out of the box. So you've improved the offensive line and you've given defenses more to think about. So hopefully the holes will be bigger and there will be less people to fill them. But at the end of the day, when you draft a rookie quarterback and you spend money on the weapons and you draft a wide receiver at number 6 overall, this is going to be a pass first team that's going to try and air the ball out. So you don't need a ton of support from your running backs. You need, you know, someone to get you 15 carries, 70, 80-ish yards a game, and just keep the chains moving, you know, keep, you know, positive, help you close out games. I think that's when the running game is really important, when you're trying to close games. You know, you're up by two scores halfway through the third quarter. Can you grind some clock with the running game? I think that's where it comes into play. And I think the Dolphins, again, if the offensive line improves and these guys, you know, maybe Gaskin takes a step up in another year, Ahmed takes a step up in another year, and those guys improve as well, I do think they can give them enough. But I agree with you in the sense that I think they could have done more and maybe felt a little bit better about that room. But overall, I like their strategy. It's very much the modern analytics, running backs don't matter strategy, which is something that I'm a big proponent of. So I hope it works out. I have a little bit more faith in these guys than you do, I think, even though Patrick Laird's probably my arch enemy on the team. But I do think that these guys will be able to do enough for Miami to have at least a serviceable running game, which I think right now is all you need in the NFL.
You know, at the end of the day, you know, the depth chart is what it looks like based on how I read it. This is Miles Gaskin's job to lose. You know, I think the most important thing for Miles Gaskin is he needs to stay healthy. He averaged, I believe it was 90 yards total of offense per game in the 10 games that he played in last year. Stretch that over 16 games, now 17 games with the new schedule this year, that's a monster season. That is a huge season for a former seventh round pick, and, you know, a smaller, you know, albeit, you know, powerful runner like Miles Gaskin. He's good out of the backfield. He's got great hands. Malcolm Brown, same way, kind of a, you know, that shorter 5'10", 5'11" guy, but a bruiser. You know, looking at his film from last year, 2020, and he was just running people over at the point of contact. Linus, you know, it's good to see, and I'm glad they did bring him in. I'd still like to see them add somebody. You know, Patrick Laird is a fine special teams guy. He's not a running back on Sundays. He's a special teams guy. That's all he can be based on what we've seen at this point. No disrespect to him, but Salvin Ahmed needs to be the guy that takes that. Kind of, in my opinion, he needs to be that fourth running back, and I'm intrigued by Jared Doakes. And I know you've done some study on him, film breakdowns and things like that. And, you know, there's a lot to like with his game. And I think he can provide a lot of punch for this ground game. What do you think the camp battle is going to be? Do you believe it's going to be that three and four running back? I believe they're going to carry four running backs. But who do you think comes out of that camp battle with those positions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously I think Gaskin and Brown are probably locks to make the team. I think off the top there, I think it'll have to be probably Doakes and Laird maybe battling it out for that last spot. I think Ahmed will probably get in. I think he's the straight line fastest guy that they have. So I think you want to try and keep that speed element. So I would assume he would be the RB3. I would say that it would be between Doakes and Laird. And I think one of the things, obviously, you're going to have to make a decision, right, is do you value Laird's special teams ability over Doakes, who's a bit, he's going to give you a bit more on offense and as an actual ball carrier. But as an RB4, how much do you care about that? My argument for Doakes would be, and I did a film breakdown for him on DolphinsTalk.com. You can check that out. It's on the site. And one of the things that I talk about a lot in that piece is that Jared Doakes is an incredibly talented pass protector. And I think that that's something that the Dolphins could really utilize. I mean, he is a brick wall back there. He laid out some linebackers last season at Cincinnati, and that was something that I was very impressed with. And he's also a pretty good pass catcher. So he almost profiles as a very solid third down back. And for me, that would be something that I would value over Patrick Laird's special teams ability. So I think those two guys are going to have to battle it out. But again, you know, you're going to have to, you know, sit down if you're Coach Flores and decide, okay, do I need Patrick Laird on special teams? You know, or do I want Jared Doakes, who I think can bring a little bit more pop like you talked about in the running game. And then, you know, he can do that. You know, he can do some of those really good things on third downs as far as pass protect and pass catch as well. So it's going to be interesting. I would assume it would be down to those two guys though.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm intrigued by Doakes. I think he may find his way there. Obviously, a strong preseason in camp is going to definitely help propel him, because he does have an uphill battle being a rookie, and albeit a seventh rounder. But, you know, the veteran guys there, they know the system. They know Brian Flores. Flores knows them. Doakes has to really get Flores' attention. And obviously the offensive coordinator's attention as well, which I love your eye roll right there.
Ridiculous.
I'm intrigued to see how this is going to work. I think there is going to be only one play caller on Sundays. I think that they're trying to throw misdirection at teams, but
here's my soapbox for the offensive coordinator things real quick. I don't want to put us too off track. My issue is not that there's two of them. My issue is that they're internal hires. What changed in the last year that makes you think those two guys are ready to lead the offense? And I'm not like asking that maliciously. I'm asking that like, I don't know. Like if those guys were offensive coordinator caliber, why didn't you hire them instead of Chan Gailey? Like that's my question. It's not like the offense was good last year, because it wasn't. It was bad. And then they promoted two people who helped the offense be bad. That's my concern. It's not that there's two of them. It's that we promoted two guys from a bad offense to a higher position in the same offense. Maybe they'll change things. Maybe they're completely different. You know, I don't know. But that is what concerns me about it.
You know, the way I look at it is anything could be better than Chan Gailey.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
You know. As you know, I was not a big fan of him. But, you know, a lot of folks really overlook, you know, they look at, you know, the Dolphins team last year. Yeah, they averaged close to 24 points per game. It's their best year on offense in a long time. You got to remember how many times the defense turned that ball over.
Yeah, exactly.
Set up, or special teams, that they were set up inside the opponent's 20-yard line to begin a drive. You know, and that's not a knock on the offense. The offense did their job. They scored the points. The defense is what got them there. And there's many games where the offense struggled to get beyond the 50-yard line until Chan Gailey had his toilet break at halftime. And then he says, okay, now we're going to actually design some good plays. I felt like every week the Dolphins would come out at halftime and score a touchdown on their opening drive. Just for whatever reason, that's how it worked out. But I'm intrigued by the coordinator aspect. I am intrigued to see how the running back room is going to play out in training camp. And, you know, I think there is going to be a surprise this year. You know, a guy like Ahmed or Gerald Doakes, you know, Jordan Scarlett may even surprise some. But, again, another uphill battle guy. But, you know, I think the way the depth chart's going to look once we get to the first game of the regular season is going to be Gaskin, Brown, Doakes, and Ahmed. I think those are going to be the guys. And if they do keep Patrick Laird, he's strictly going to be a special teams guy. I can't see him running the football ever again for the Miami Dolphins. So now let's get into, I think, I could be wrong, but this could be my favorite of all the position skill position groups. It's the wide receivers. The wide receiver group, not the tight ends. The wide receiver group is probably the best I've seen it in a long time, and they've made tremendous improvements to this group in this offseason. Dante, before we dive into the depth chart, we got to talk about the additions. We got to talk about the additions of Will Fuller as a free agent on a one-year deal, prove-it deal, suspended for the first game, but he comes aboard with lightning-fast speed and the ability just to blow a top off the defense. To pair with another guy who can absolutely obliterate a defensive game plan with his ability in the open field to make guys miss, his route running ability, his stop and go is incredible. They drafted Jalen Waddle at the number 6 spot in this draft. Let's talk about those two guys first before we dive into the full depth chart. What do you feel? How do you feel about the additions of these guys and how it's going to improve this offense and what they're going to bring to the table?
Yeah, when I tell you I could not have scripted two better players to alleviate the Dolphins' problems in the passing attack, I mean it. These are, I mean, just absolutely exactly what the Dolphins needed in Will Fuller and Jalen Waddle. One of the things that you and I both complained about last year for a lot was just like, this team just cannot generate explosive plays on offense. The wide receivers can't separate from a statue. You know, we got a bunch of catch point guys, a bunch of tall dudes. We need some juice. The Dolphins needed some juice on offense last year. And Jaylen Waddle and Will Fuller have a ton of juice, man. They're going to be absolutely phenomenal. They're going to open up this offense. This is going to look significantly closer to what Tua had at Alabama, as far as you have your outside guys, you have your Preston Williamses and Devontae Parkers of the world. But to complement those guys, you have your Jaylen Waddles and your Will Fullers who can blow the top off of defenses. More specifically, you get a player in Will Fuller who's an incredibly talented vertical threat. Right. So he's running the nines, the posts, the comebacks, those different things. That's where Will Fuller thrives. Now you get Jaylen Waddle in the game. He's more, he can do those things. He's a great vertical speed threat. Don't get me wrong, but he can be your horizontal deep threat. Right. What do we see with a lot of NFL offenses right now? It's that motion, man, that jet sweep, man. Right. Every time we see constantly players going in motion, that's another thing that you and I complained about last year. The Dolphins offense, incredibly stoic, just very blah. Right. Jaylen Waddle gives you creativity. He gives you a legitimate jet sweep guy. Right. You know, they try to use Lynn Bowden in that role and Dakeem Grant, and those guys are OK, but they're not really pushing. You know, they're not really threatening defenses. Jaylen Waddle is going to threaten defenses. So you get your horizontal stretch speed guy and you get your vertical stretch speed guy in Fuller and Waddle. That's exactly what this offense was missing last year. They didn't have that player that could threaten defenses. And threaten them, okay, like, if they throw a bubble screen at Jaylen Waddle and I'm a defensive coordinator, it's like, okay, like, I need to prepare my players to tackle him every week because he runs a 4-3 and he's strong as hell, and then I have to worry about Will Fuller blowing the top off from the slot or even from the outside as well. So as a defensive coordinator, I'm torn. If I double cover Will Fuller, well, that's going to leave single coverage on Devontae Parker. That's also going to take somebody out of the box for the running game, or it's going to take someone out of the box on a bubble screen to Jaylen Waddle on the outside. So if you're a defensive coordinator, you have to think about these things. When teams played Miami last year, they did not have to think about these things. They weren't worried. I mean, Hakeem Grant had, some moments of brilliance, but defensive coordinators were more than willing to let Hakeem Grant get a 20-yard run on a reverse once or twice and just continue to pester Devontae Parker or stack the box and stop the run game. They didn't have to worry about those things. They're going to have to worry about Will Fuller as long as he's healthy. And same thing for Jaylen Waddle. Those guys are dynamic players. And that's exactly what this team was missing. So like I said at the top, I don't think you could have scripted it two better additions to this team than what they got there.
I agree with you. I was very happy when they brought in Will Fuller. I was ecstatic when they brought in Jaylen Waddle. I was between Chase and Waddle at six, and when once Chase was the pick, we had to know as fans they are taking Jaylen Waddle. Because of the continuity with Tua in their time in Alabama, that's important. They know each other forward and back. Like, Tua will know where Jaylen Waddle is going to be. We saw that in some of the mini camp tweets from some of the beat writers. Is like, Tua knows where Jaylen Waddle was going to be, and he put the ball on target and Waddle just ran under it. And I think that's going to be a key component. And you're 100% right. We complained a ton last year about how stagnant these guys were and they couldn't get off the line of scrimmage. All teams are doing, we're bringing their corners right to the line of scrimmage. And they were jamming those guys at the line because they knew they could not get off that jam and they struggled. And that what forced the issue with Tua, because Tua had to force a lot of throws into those tighter windows. And he wasn't comfortable doing that in his rookie season. So you bring in these two guys. Now let's dig into the depth chart. You bring in those two guys. You still have Devontae Parker. And when healthy, he is a bottom tier number one wide receiver. He's still a very good player when healthy. Last year, he took a step back. He was injured. He played through a lot of those injuries that he got during the games. Preston Williams just cannot stay healthy past week 9. That is like, I just, for the life of me, just sit him in week 9 or 10 this coming season, just so he doesn't get hurt again to have a season-ending injury, because he did it against the Jets and against Arizona. This kid has so much promise, so much promise. The unicorn has a ton of potential in this offense. So you have two big wide receivers. You have Waddle and Fuller, who can really wreak hell on slot defenders or outside guys if you really want to press those guys on the outside. But you're getting back Albert Wilson, who personally is a very good yards after the catch guy. We saw that before his injury in the 2018 season, where he just was absolutely he was very impressive until he hurt his hip against the Lions. You have Jakeem Grant, very good special teams guy, can't catch a cold. You have Kirk Merritt. He's got an uphill battle to make the roster. Alan Hearns, same thing. Robert Foster was brought in. I like what Robert Foster could bring to the table. He's very fast, and again, an Alabama guy. So we'll see, how he does. But you got Kai Loxley, and then you got Mac Hollins. Mac Hollins, I think, has a strong chance to make the roster because, again, what he can do on special teams. He's a good special teams guy. And in a pinch last year, he was the number one wide receiver, and he actually had his moments on the field. Is he going to be a top five guy here? No, but he could be that rotational 5-6 guy if they do decide to keep him on the roster. So being that this position group is so deep, Dante, who's on the bubble? Who's on the bubble now that you have Hearns, Wilson, both of those guys back, and obviously you have Mac Hollins there too. Who are the guys on the bubble? If you want to start with the guys who you think are going to make the roster, obviously I think we know the top four right off the top of our head.
Right. I would say, honestly, I'm a little bit hesitant to say that Preston's definitely in. I think it's like 85% that he's going to be on the roster. But, even I would say that he's a little bit on the bubble. I mean, he just can't stay healthy. The Dolphins aren't really tied to him, and they have some guys. I mean, look, if Albert Wilson, Lynn Bowden, and like Robert Foster really impress, I mean, are you going to keep Preston Williams? I don't know. I would hope so. But again, how confident are they in his ability to stay healthy? How does he come back from that injury? Do they want, it seems like they're kind of moving towards a different type of receiver. I would keep him around because I think you need that backup X at worst for Parker, even if you're not going to play two of those guys consistently. But even if we say it's Williams, Waddle, Fuller and Parker as the four guys that we think are, I'm assuming those are your four as well off the top that we think are going to make the team. I would say everybody else has a legitimate shot outside of I don't think Kai Loxley's going to make it, frankly. I don't think Kirk Merritt's going to make it either. But I would say, you're looking at Lynn Bowden, Malcolm Perry, still a guy who's in the picture as well at wide receiver. Albert Wilson's back, Alan Hearns, Mac Hollins, Hakeem Grant. I think all those guys are going to be battling for, I don't know, what are they going to keep? Seven at most, probably seven receivers, I would think. So those guys are probably battling for three and a half spots if you want to do over-unders. It's going to be tough, man, but I would say all those guys are on the bubble. And, it kind of comes down to, what do the Dolphins value? How much does special teams factor into that? Because again, you talked about Mac Hollins, and we can talk about Mac Hollins' ability as a receiver all night, but like you said, let's be honest. I mean, he's a special teams guy and he's very good at it. And I think he's worth rostering because of that ability. Special teams gets kicked to the curb a lot, but it matters. If you don't have good special teams, you can lose football games. And Mac Hollins is a very good special teamer. He's a great gunner. He's a good blocker, different things like that. I mean, he even tackles people. He's very good. And I think that's worth rostering. So you have to talk about, okay, is Hakeem Grant, is he going to be the kick return guy? Are they going to give those responsibilities to Jalen Waddle, or is Lynn Bowden going to take those? What, is Noah Igbinoghene in that competition? Who wins that competition? That factors into how many receivers they keep. Because if Igbo wins that, do you keep Hakeem Grant? Personally, I would not. But so, that kind of goes into it. How healthy is Albert Wilson? Because if he is healthy, I think there's a fair argument to make that he's like the third best receiver, not counting Waddle, because we haven't seen him yet. He's either the second or third best receiver on the team if he's healthy, and he's undoubtedly a very, very dynamic player that they should keep if he's back to where he was. They have a lot of really, really difficult decisions to make. And I think, you said it at the top, this is probably going to be like your favorite one. And I agree, man, this is going to be my favorite battle, because I think that there's legitimately like six, seven-ish guys fighting for three and a half spots. And we're going to see, maybe some surprise cuts to some at this position, because at the end of the day, the Dolphins can't keep all these guys. And I think a bunch of them have a really good argument.
Yeah, you know, when you look at it, I think pre-injury, pre-COVID, Albert Wilson, I think he needs to be on the roster.
I agree.
I think he brings that element. Now, you know, I could look at this, you know, you could say, you know, here's Jalen Waddle, here's Will Fuller, and here's Albert Wilson. And you got those guys stacked. What do you do as a defensive coordinator? How do you slow that down? You know, there's so much speed on the field. And even if Jakeem Grant's there, I mean, you could throw four speed guys out there. You don't have enough guys on defense to cover those guys if they're all going vertical or if there's guys coming underneath. You know, there's so many different ways that the Dolphins can attack a team with the group of wide receivers that they have. Possession wide receivers, check. Speed wide receivers, check. You know, guys that can catch the football and not drop them, check for the most part, you know. But I think this is going to be a very dynamic part of the training camp, is just to see the battle at the wide receiver position and how the Dolphins handle that when it's time to cut down the roster to 53, which, by the way, after COVID last year and moving to an extra game, how are they still doing 53 guys? They should have expanded to the rosters to help these guys stay healthier. I mean,
the players have been asking for roster expansions for years now, and I just don't think they've been able to push it through for whatever reason.
I don't get it. I really don't get it. But what I do get is that there's one more position group that we do need to talk about, and that is the tight end position. And we know, based off what we saw last year, Mike Gesicki is a freaking stud. That guy can pretty much do everything you ask him to do as a pass catcher. Catching traffic, three guys around you, yeah, no problem. Go over the middle, make a big play on a third down, yeah, no problem. Jump over a guy in the end zone to score a touchdown, yeah, no problem. Unquestionably, Mike Gesicki needs to be, if he performs well this year, he needs to get locked up. I don't think you can let a talent like that just go out the door, especially with how athletic he really is. But the Dolphins made an interesting move in the draft. And I think you were a big fan of that move when they drafted Hunter Long in the fifth round. I questioned it because I liked what I saw out of Shaheen and Smythe being red zone guys last year. They found creative ways to get those guys the football, and they made it count. So Hunter Long being brought in, what does he bring to the table, and what can he bring with Mike Gesicki on the football field?
Yeah, I think with Long, and again, I was like you when they made that pick. I was kind of like, you know, I liked Hunter Long, the player, right? I'm a draft analyst at heart. So I liked Hunter Long, the player. And then, you know, but when I heard that the Dolphins picked him, I was like very confused, because it was just like you said, right? Like, they got good usage out of Durham Smythe, Adam Shaheen last year. And like you said, Mike Gesicki's a stud. So it was weird. But when I sat down and I rewatched the film and kind of frameworked, you know, okay, I know where this player is now. What is he going to bring to the table? I mean, he is a complete tight end, right? When you talk about Mike Gesicki, he's a pass catcher. Let's be honest, he's a glorified wide receiver. I'll give him credit. He's improved as a blocker. He's significantly better than he was when he came into the league, but he's still not good at it. And that's okay. It's fine. He's good enough. That's what matters. But let's be honest, he's a glorified wide receiver. Then you look at Durham Smythe. I'm not really a big Durham Smythe guy, but he's an okay blocker. That's his job. He blocks. Cool. Adam Shaheen, he's a big dude. He makes red zone threats. You know, he's a red zone threat. Fine. Hunter Long, at his ceiling, if Hunter Long develops the way that the Dolphins, I imagine, want him to develop, he's going to be a complete tight end. He's not just going to be a blocker. He's not just going to be a receiver. Now, will he be as good as a receiver as Mike Gesicki? No, he doesn't have that athletic ceiling. Will he be as stout as a blocker as Durham Smythe? I think he can be, but I don't know if he gets there. But he's going to be more complete. He's going to be more well-rounded. And what he's going to allow the Dolphins to do, again, if he hits his ceiling and he develops the way that they want, is he's going to be able to go out there and line up with Mike Gesicki, and he's going to be a legitimate threat that's going to make the Dolphins a legitimate threat in 12 personnel, which right now is just the cream of the crop in the NFL. If you're not doing 12 personnel stuff – you're missing out, right? Like the best offenses are doing it. Again, for people who don't know what 12 personnel is, that's one running back, two tight ends. It allows you to disguise your offense. It allows you to challenge defenses and create mismatches. I mean, quite frankly, look, Durham Smythe did some cool stuff last year. Defenses are not remotely concerned about him making plays, right? Like they're not. And again, Hunter Long has the ability to threaten as a receiver much more than Durham Smythe does, while also providing that same blocking ability that Durham Smythe has. So in theory, again, I think a lot of people talked about when Hunter Long was the pick is, oh, maybe this means the Dolphins aren't going to pay Gesicki. I don't know if that's the case. I would lean instead that, I mean, I think Hunter Long's the perfect complement to Mike Gesicki, again, if he develops and reaches that ceiling. So for me, this allows the Dolphins to be more multiple. This allows the Dolphins to have a – is Long better than Durham Smythe? Yes, absolutely. So, you know, again, he is – he's Durham Smythe, but he's a better athlete and a better receiver. Think of it kind of like that, right, in that role. They're going to want him to do a lot of things that Durham Smythe is doing. I don't know if we're going to see that in year one. Tight ends typically take – 1 to 2 years to really figure it out. I mean, heck, we even saw that with Mike Gesicki. I know obviously Adam Gase was a problem too, so that was a mess. But again, Long gives the Dolphins an opportunity to run a lot of 12 personnel, threaten defenses more, kind of like what we talked about with receivers. What are you going to do when you stack up three speed guys in a bunch set? Okay, well, the same premise is true of, you know, what are you going to do if you have two receiving tight ends and, you know, one of those guys at least, or both of those guys are at least serviceable blockers? You don't like it's a challenge. It's a mismatched weapon. So that's why Hunter Long fits in. And that's why I became much more of a fan of the pick after I went back and watched Hunter Long again and kind of with the framework of, okay, this is a team that drafted him. What can he do? So that's where I would point to this. I don't know how much we see that this year again, because tight end is one of the most difficult transitions for players to make. It usually takes a couple of years. But that is kind of the ceiling with Long. So I don't think that he's Gesicki's future replacement. I think that he's Gesicki's future partner in crime. Now, is that worth a third round pick? That's an argument that we can have. I don't know how I feel about that still. We'll have to see how it works in practice. But I think the idea behind it is really good.
Yeah. You know, I think the, I think the importance of Hunter Long there is to have that 12 personnel, like you said, because look what the Patriots did this offseason. Not only did they buy Jonu Smith, they bought Hunter Henry too. And when think of the Patriots offense a decade ago, decade and a half ago, what did they do really well? So 12 personnel. Rob Gronkowski and, you know, unfortunately, Aaron Hernandez. But when those two guys were on the football field at the same time, complete mismatch problems. And they allowed the Patriots' run game to really control the clock because they were obviously able to get up on the scoreboard early, and then they were able to just grind teams down with that 12 personnel as the game progressed. So having the two tight ends and two dynamic tight ends adds another element to your team. You can run out there at the 12 personnel. You can use those two guys at wide receivers and have two other wide receivers on the football field with them and still be in that personnel group. It just allows more versatility for the Dolphins. And I think that pick makes sense. Durham Smythe, Adam Shaheen, I think that's going to be the biggest camp battle between those two guys to find out who the third tight end is going to be. They do have Chris Myrick still on the roster. They added Seathan Carter from Cincinnati as a free agent, and they brought in Jabrari Blount, Mel Blount's son, into the fold. I think he's more of a like a project player because he's never played a down of football in his life. But we know with basketball players or volleyball players or whatever, those guys can sometimes transition. You know, guys like Antonio Gates. Those guys can transition to the NFL. So I think, you know, Blount, take him out of the equation. He's not going to be in this. I don't think Myrick is going to have a chance based on that. Shaheen got a contract extension last year, and Smythe is on the last year of his deal, which could lead to Smythe being one of those cap cuts, and not cap casualties, but cut to trim down for the 53. So there could be a chance that Meyer could sneak into that fourth tight end guy if they decide to carry four. But you have Gesicki, you have Long, and now the battle is really between Shaheen and Smythe. And we'll see how that plays out and how the Dolphins, again, work that part of the roster. How many guys do you want to carry? Again, you're down to 53 guys on the roster. Every Sunday, you know, or throughout the season, you have 53 active guys, 46 guys on Sunday. There's only so many spots you can do. You need to make sure you have your offensive linemen. You need to make sure that you have your defensive, you know, your corners. You got to have some edge rushers and obviously your wide receivers. So you can't have too many tight ends on the active roster. So that's going to be an interesting camp battle. I think those two guys are the guys really to watch there. That's it for part one. So we talked about the skill guys. You know, we're going to get into the other positions. And obviously one of Dante's favorite categories, the offensive line, the trenches, those guys, you mentioned the improvement on that offensive line. We are going to talk about that in part two of our series, which we'll announce as we progress through the week when we will have that second part. And then the third part of our series is going to be the defense. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun to talk about because the defense was top five last year, and there's a huge, huge, huge elephant in the room right now on that side of the ball. We're not going to get into it right now, but you all know who we're talking about. X. So we got a lot to talk about throughout the rest of this. And then we're going to go into, after the defense, we're going to give a roster prediction, a 53-man roster prediction on who we think is going to be on the Miami Dolphins come week one. Always something fun that I'd like to do in my articles. Now adding Dante into the mix. Let's see how that plays out. And then we'll talk about it maybe during our first countdown to kickoff show for the regular season and see how the roster pans out. So I'd like to thank everybody for watching and listening. Be sure to go to dolphinstalk.com every single day for all the latest Miami Dolphins news and information. Be sure to go to manscaped.com and use the promo code DolphinsTalk for 20% off your order and free shipping. Again, manscaped.com, promo code DolphinsTalk for 20% and free shipping. Be sure to check them out. And that is it. Dante, do you have anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
No, I think we did. I think we killed it, man. That was great.
Excellent. So thank you all for joining us, and we will talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.